Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. It's Sunday, July 10th, and we'll open with a tribute to the fallen police officers in Dallas. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Italian Tomatoes. It's Sunday, July 10th. I'm your host, Bob Curie. And we're going to this show was originally supposed to be done on Friday evening, but I canceled it because of the police shootings in Dallas. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I thought as a gesture of respect to the tragedy that happened there, I was not going to do an essentially politically themed radio show on that evening. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat and to call into the show. The number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. The subject of the show is tragedy and travesty. Well, it's pretty clear what the tragedy is. The police shootings in Dallas were just totally, absolutely needless and pointless and evil. And there really can be not enough words said to that effect, and that message needs to be drummed home constantly. From a personal perspective, it was very creepy looking at that scene. The Dallas downtown is a very strange area where that shooting occurred. I've been in the big skyscraper a number of times that you saw on the television. Downtown Dallas is a very kind of artificial environment where they really roll up the sidewalks after 6 o'clock. There have been many attempts to revitalize it, but there is no life in downtown in the evenings. It is not a very friendly place to be. There have been a lot of attempts at revitalization north and west of the downtown business area, and those have had spotty success. But the business area itself is just not a very community-oriented place, and it just seemed somewhat keeping with the atmosphere of the place that a tragedy took place there. I have some, personal experiences with very limited personal experiences with the whole issue of fallen police officers. A number of months ago, a group that provides assistance to the families of fallen police officers had a picnic in one of the local parks, and I happened to be at the park during that time and got to observe the children of the fallen police officers and the surviving parents, and they were accompanied by other police officers. It was just an atmosphere of just overwhelming sadness looking at that. Police performance is a legitimate issue, and deaths in custody do happen that shouldn't happen, but the politicization of these cases is creating a monster that is going out of control. We saw it in New York last year, and now we've seen a repeat in Dallas this year. So now five police officers are dead who shouldn't be. They span the spectrum of our society. Recently married, some had young kids, one was close to retirement. And the tragedy is all the more unfair as Dallas has really gone the extra mile to be responsive to community concerns when policing. They really have revamped their procedures to make police presence more community friendly and less intrusive and intimidating. And it's so sad that because of a few agitators fanned by the mass media, this is the type of tragedy that struck the city. Well, where does that leave us? I mean, as citizens, we have to go the extra mile to make our society a better place, and of course, there is no better place to do that than to try to get our political process to turn things around. And so that will be the subject of the balance of the show. Of course, the travesty referenced in the show title, it has to do with all of the things that happened with the infamous Hillary Clinton email investigation, which concluded in that absolutely bizarre sequence of events that culminated in the appearance, the press conference that James Comey gave, and then his subsequent appearance before Congress. The whole thing does give the appearance of a rigged system, especially that elaborate kabuki dance that was done to get Hillary Clinton off the hook, and the pre-signal that was telegraphed to the public that this investigation had a predetermined conclusion. You had the infamous Bill Clinton-Loretta Lynch meeting. You had Hillary and Obama on Air Force One doing a campaign appearance together on the day that the results of the investigation, was going to be announced. You had the absolutely bizarre weekend episode where Hillary met with the FBI at long last, but she was not under oath and there were no records kept. The investigation just dragged on and on and on for months until the final denouement, if you will, occurs the month of the Democratic Convention. Well, you know that there could be no indictment that close to the nomination of a candidate for the presidency of the United States. Now, in my view, the outcome would have been very different had Joe Biden run. I think it would have been a more thorough investigation, one that did not give the appearance of being rigged, and one that would have been done on a more timely basis with the results announced months before the actual Democratic convention. But this thing, I think the whole dynamic was Obama may not like Hillary, but she was the default candidate. It's in his interest that a Democrat succeed him. So the results were managed not to torpedo her candidacy. I'm going to play a couple of clips of the appearances that dominated the news cycle this week, and just to give a flavor of what went on there. Of course, there was the opening with Jason Chaffetz talking to James Comey during the hearing, and that was quite interesting to listen to this dynamic. So let's play a few minutes of that.
Servers. The operational server was in the basement of her home in New York. The reason I'm answering it that way is sometimes after they were decommissioned, they were moved to other facilities, storage facilities, but the live device was always in the basement.
Was that an authorized or unauthorized location?
It was an unauthorized location for the transmitting of classified information.
Is it reasonable or unreasonable to expect Hillary Clinton would receive and send classified information?
As Secretary of State? Reasonable that the Secretary of State would encounter classified information in the course of the Secretary's work.
Via email?
Sure, depending upon the nature of the system. To communicate classified information would have to be a classified rated email system.
But you did find more than 100 emails that were classified that had gone through that server, correct?
Right, through an unclassified server, correct.
Yes. So Hillary Clinton did come to possess documents and materials containing classified information via email on these unsecured servers, correct?
That is correct.
Did Hillary Clinton lie?
To the FBI? We have no basis to conclude she lied to the FBI.
Did she lie to the public?
That's a question I'm not qualified to answer. I can speak about what she said to the FBI.
Did Hillary Clinton lie under oath?
Not to the FBI, not in a case we're working.
Did you review the documents where Congressman Jim Jordan asked her specifically? And she said, quote, there was nothing marked classified on my emails, either sent or received, end quote.
I don't remember reviewing that particular testimony. I'm aware of that being said, though.
Did the FBI investigate her statements under oath on this topic?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think there's been a referral from Congress.
Do you need a referral from Congress to investigate her statements under oath?
Sure do.
You'll have one. You'll have one in the next few hours. Did Hillary Clinton break the law?
In connection with her use of the email server, my judgment is that she did not.
Did you just not able to prosecute it, or did Hillary Clinton break the law?
Well, I don't want to give an overly lawyerly answer. The question I always look at is there evidence that would establish beyond a reasonable doubt that somebody engaged in conduct that violated a criminal statute? And my judgment here is there is not.
The FBI does background checks. If Hillary Clinton applied for the job at the FBI, would the FBI give Hillary Clinton a security clearance?
I don't want to answer a hypothetical. The FBI has a robust process in which we adjudicate the suitability of people for employment in the Bureau.
Given the fact pattern you laid out less than 48 hours ago, would a person who had dealt with classified information like that, would that person be granted a security clearance at the FBI?
It would be a very important consideration in a suitability determination.
You're kind of making my point, Director. The point being, because I injected the word Hillary Clinton, you gave me a different answer.
Chaffetz had a very, you know, somewhat laid-back style in doing these questions, but they obviously were very pointed nonetheless, and at the end of it, there were two really important takeaways. Number one, Hillary Clinton now has another issue that needs to be dealt with, which was whether she lied to Congress under oath in previous testimony, even if she was not going to be indicted for obstruction of justice or gross negligence in handling secure materials with her email server with respect to the FBI investigation. There still is the issue of what she told Congress. And then the second point, which really comes out of that exchange, is the fact that if she were a normal person, there is no way that Hillary Clinton would get a security clearance for anything, excuse me, in the U.S. government if normal standards of due diligence were applied to her as a prospective employee for any kind of position. So you saw one style of interrogation there. And now we're going to get kind of a very different style from the redoubtable Trey Gowdy, and this is a very interesting exchange too. And let's hear a few minutes of that.
Omi, Secretary Clinton said she never sent or received any classified information over her private email. Was that true?
Our investigation found that there was classified information sent.
So it was not true.
Right. That's what I said.
Okay. Well, I'm looking for a little shorter answer, so you and I are not here quite as long. Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true. There were a small number of portion markings on, I think, three of the documents.
Secretary Clinton said I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
Now, there was classified material emailed.
Secretary Clinton said she used just one device. Was that true?
She used multiple devices during the 4 years of her term as Secretary of State.
Secretary Clinton said all work-related emails were returned to the State Department. Was that true?
No, we found work-related emails, thousands, that were not returned.
Secretary Clinton said neither she nor anyone else deleted work-related emails from her personal account. Was that true?
That's a harder one to answer. We found traces of work-related emails on devices or in Slack space, whether they were deleted or whether when a server was changed out, something happened to them. There's no doubt that there were work-related emails that were removed electronically from the email system.
Secretary Clinton said her lawyers read every one of the emails and were overly inclusive. Did her lawyers read the email content individually?
No.
Well, in the interest of time, and because I have a plane to catch tomorrow afternoon, I'm not going to go through any more of the false statements, but I am going to ask you to put on your old hat. False exculpatory statements, they are used for what?
Well, either for a substantive prosecution or for evidence of intent in a criminal prosecution.
Exactly. Intent and consciousness of guilt, right? Is that right?
Right.
Consciousness of guilt and intent. In your old job, you would prove intent, as you just referenced, by showing the jury evidence of a complex scheme that was designed for the very purpose of concealing the public record. And you would be arguing, in addition to concealment, the destruction that you and I just talked about, or certainly the failure to preserve. You would argue all of that under the heading of content. You would also be arguing the pervasiveness of the scheme, when it started, when it ended, and the number of emails, whether they were originally classified or upclassified. You would argue all of that under the heading of intent. You would also probably, under common scheme or plan, argue the burn bags of daily calendar entries or the missing daily calendar entries as a common scheme or plan to conceal. 2 days ago, Director, you said a reasonable person in her position should have known a private email was no place to send and receive classified information. You're right. An average person does know not to do that. This is no average person. This is a former First Lady, a former United States Senator, and a former Secretary of State that the President now contends is the most competent, qualified person to be president since Jefferson. He didn't say that in 08, but he says it now. She affirmatively rejected efforts to give her a state.gov account. She kept these private emails for almost 2 years and only turned them over to Congress because we found out she had a private email account. So you have a rogue email system set up before she took the oath of office, thousands of what we now know to be classified emails, some of which were classified at the time. One of her more frequent email comrades was, in fact, hacked, and you don't know whether or not she was. And this scheme took place over a long period of time and resulted in the destruction of public records, and yet you say there is insufficient evidence of intent. You say she was extremely careless, but not intentionally so. You and I both know intent is really difficult to prove. Very rarely do defendants announce, on this date, I intend to break this criminal code section. Just to put everyone on notice, I am going to break the law on this date. It never happens that way. You have to do it with circumstantial evidence. Or if you're Congress and you realize how difficult it is to prove specific intent, you will formulate a statute that allows for gross negligence. My time is out, but this is really important. You mentioned there's no precedent for criminal prosecution. My fear is there still isn't. There's nothing to keep a future Secretary of State or President from this exact same email scheme or their staff. And my real fear is this. It's what the chairman touched upon. This double-track justice system that is rightly or wrongly perceived in this country. That if you are a private in the Army and you email yourself classified information, you will be kicked out. But if you are Hillary Clinton and you seek a promotion to Commander-in-Chief, you will not be. So what I hope you can do today is help the average person, the reasonable person you made reference to, the reasonable person understand why she appears to be treated differently than the rest of us would be. With that, I would yield back.
That really is just a remarkable exchange, and then, of course, the two things that it highlights are, number one, she lied and lied and lied and lied and lied and lied, and then number two, given her experience in government, there is no way all of this covering up and deleting and obfuscation was not intentional, and yet the fiction is that there was no intentional violation of the law. And of course, Gowdy poses the question at the end about the whole issue of the double standard in the justice system and what is to prevent something like this from happening in the future now that this amazingly public precedent has been set of somebody clearly engaging in lies and obfuscation on a scale like this. What is to prevent this from happening in the future when the stakes are even higher? It's just an astonishing exchange, and to me it just summarizes why this whole thing stinks to high heaven, in the phrase that William Safire used back in the day when he was analyzing some of the revelations that were coming out of the Watergate investigation. Well, there's only one way that this is going to be fixed, and that is through the political process. The justice system is not going to hold the powerful accountable with the current occupant of the White House and the prospective occupant in the form of Hillary Clinton. So again, this just highlights the importance of a Republican victory this November all across the board, President and Congress, to finally restore some accountability in our government. And for those people in the Republican Party or the conservative movement who are still nursing wounds from a very divisive primary season, you know, you guys really have to just face up to the reality of what's ahead of us if we elect Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States. Well, going on to the market, which is, was going to be the second component of the canceled Friday show, we had some interesting economic news at the end of the week, and it was an upbeat jobs report. And the jobs report got a lot of buzz because the economy created 287,000 jobs, which was a good figure relative to other months. And the normal chorus of commentators was saying, ah, you know, this proves the recovery is strong, that that the previous month of mediocre performance, we don't need to worry about them, and the Obama recovery is going ahead full speed. And I just don't buy that interpretation of the facts, because the facts form a very depressing pattern where you have an upbeat release of economic statistics, but when you look at the prior months and average them out, what you have is a constant stream of mediocre economic performance. For example, the jobs report of 287,000 new jobs in March, excuse me, in June, followed a terrible report in May of 11,000 jobs created. Well, you add the two together and you get a very below average, mediocre a number over 2 months of 149,000 created. And this is the problem with economic analysis in the age of Obama. The media constantly ignores, and I include the business press in this, the mediocrity of the data. They trumpet the good months as proof that the administration's policies are working, and they ignore the bad months or downplay them, and they don't really pay attention to the long-term trend, the average numbers, which are awful. So you have upbeat reports and stinkers average out to low economic growth with high structural unemployment, and that is really the big picture. The economy is not creating enough wealth to match population growth, either natural growth, legal immigration, and illegal immigration. And once you get away from the perspective of the ever more comfortable top fifth of our population on the economic ladder, the people that are benefiting from crony capitalism and government favors, you see the underside of the economy. And we'll be going into this more in subsequent podcasts. Half the country has no savings. I read one report this week that showed that many households do not even have enough savings to meet an unexpected medical bill in the realm of $400. I see this in the course of my tax practice, where I have clients who are getting by on a collection of part-time jobs, shaky W-2 reporting on the part of employers. Many employers are paying contractors and paying employees as contractors these days to avoid Social Security taxes and payroll taxes, and that puts an additional tax burden on people who are making a living as contractors when they're really not contractors. And I've seen a number of cases where there's constant turnover in the employment market. People are losing their jobs. They are unemployed for several months. They make due on unemployment insurance,
and raiding their 401ks. And the net result is that the average balance sheet of the average American household has just continued to deteriorate over this so-called recovery of the past 6 years. Now, the Wall Street Journal article that I looked at that was touting the upbeat jobs numbers closed with the experience of a power plant worker who worked in a coal plant and was laid off, and he was able to find a job, and they point to this as evidence. Well, the jobs are really out there. But when you read when you go deeper into the story, you find out that the guy had to take a pay cut, had to be willing to relocate, and his refuge of last resort was Texas. And, of course, the state of Texas has been pursuing policies that are totally at variance with the high regulation and high tax policies pursued by our federal government. So the long-term trend for the average American household is not good. They have fewer resources than ever to meet emergencies. And, you know, the fact of life is that there are always emergencies. There are always things that you don't anticipate that pop up in your day-to-day household expenses, medical bills, car repairs, whatever. I mean, it's always happening, and people have less and less savings to meet that. So in my view, the economic malaise that we have these days is as bad as it ever was in the Jimmy Carter days. And we have an incumbent president and a Democratic candidate for the office of president who are far less admirable in terms of their dedication to the country's interests and integrity than Jimmy Carter. So once again, in looking at the events of the past week, I think that all people who are inclined to the sort of conservative perspective on our public affairs, like I am, who are Republicans, or who are independents, just concerned about the general direction of the country, you need to really look at what's going on and make the judgment as to what you are going to do in November. And on that note, I'm going to close the show. Looks like a light day in terms of live listenership. No one has any questions or comments that need to be addressed. So I just can't emphasize it too strongly. Look at the state of your country, make the appropriate judgment, and act on it this November. So once again, I want to express my condolences to the families and friends of the fallen police officers, and I hope that the country finds a way out of this terrible summer of violence that we've been experiencing. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. Cherish your families. Cherish your community. And respect the role of the law enforcement community in protecting our society. Have a great day. Thank you.